Welcome to the 229th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thank you for listening. Well, I'm a week out from the Chattanooga Ironman. Feeling good. Feel recovered. Started back swim, bike, and running. Back to doing my planks. I'm up to a 4.5-minute hold on a plank and then roll around. And so I'm doing about 10 minutes of planks, 10 and a half minutes of planks every day. Had a couple swims this week, had a bike this week, and had some runs. Gonna do a 10-miler tomorrow. Easing back into things, mostly easy runs, just a few hill pickups, but feel good. Still gonna keep adding some strength training. Little episodes, not trying to get sore or anything, but just to keep mobility and build some leg strength and keep my upper body strength intact. Next up is the California International Marathon in December, so I'm hoping to have a good run there, so we'll see what happens. Backyard garden, still a little dormant. We're starting to get some cool weather here in Florida. It's supposed to be in the 60s in the morning. I'm excited about that, to go for a run in the 60s. But the humidity is starting to leave, and it's very much welcomed. We planted some papaya trees last week. We had this one papaya tree that just kind of came up on its own in the backyard, probably with the help of a bird. But it produced like 8 or 10 papayas that were just out of this world. So once you've had your own papayas in the backyard, it's the grocery store ones just don't cut it as much. So we're trying to get the papaya farm going so it can match the mango farm if we can. Other than that, some peppers and tomatoes and herbs are starting to get going. Enjoying microgreens. Shout out to the Sprout people. It's where I get my seeds from. I'm also, last weekend I was at the Veg Expo in Bradenton by the Solutionary Group, and there was a guy with microgreens. It was very knowledgeable and educational, so he spoke as well as I did, so we're going to have him on the podcast in a couple of weeks. I'll keep that as a surprise. You can get a lot of bang for your bucks. A handful of microgreens can be equal to a head of broccoli. So if you're really trying to up your nutrition, that's a great way to go. It's a great way to have a salad. Top those, top a veggie burger with the microgreens. Anything. It makes, makes the presentation look better. I always try to tell people in my class that, you need to be... think enough of yourself and enough of your health to make your plate look good. When you're preparing your plate, adding in some microgreens, you're going to add nutrition, you're going to add color. You can be a little artistic with them. So it's a lot of fun. And I grow them inside, get them started and sprouted in my little trays, and then open the trays up to the sunlight, have them in the window, and they take care of themselves. Very little work, very little water, just trim them off, and the pea shoots just keep coming back up. So it's a lot of fun. So if you live in an apartment or condo where you can't have a garden outside, I would highly suggest doing some sprouting and microgreens to kind of help your nutrition along. I've heard from a couple people this week that they just don't have time to cook, or it takes too long to cook. One solution would be to find somebody that you really trusted that could send you meals or cook for you. So if you're affluent enough that you can train a chef to what they want to cook without organic foods and sugar, oil, and salt free, that's great, but most of us can't afford that. But I think the first step, I really recommend people cook. You can get 2 or 3 meals down that you like. It doesn't have to be complicated. But they can be pretty when you present them, because when you have all the colors and you put things nicely on a plate, it works really good. But, most of the time during the week, I keep saying over and over again, 30 to an hour of prep, door to table as far as meal preps go. In class today, we made a frittata in a skillet. So everything was made of one skillet meal. I guess one bowl to mix the frittata mix up. So the batter we made with our garbanzo bean flour and just turmeric and garlic and cumin and some water, and whipped that up and poured that over top of some sauteed vegetables. So we did onions, peppers, tomatoes and spinach. Pour the batter over top of that. Starts to set up. Finish it in the oven about 15 minutes. It will slice right up in the skillet. So that's a really, really quick meal. The only thing you have to do is, you know, prep your peppers and your onions and your mushrooms. You know, dice them up fine. If you can't use a knife, learn how. If you really don't want to learn, you know, you can get these little machines that'll dice things for you that are pretty simple. They're little square boxes that you can do. You can buy in a lot of grocery store the vegetables already diced up. But again, somebody had their hands on them. The cleanliness, passing of germs and microbes. So I prefer to get my own vegetables and chop them myself. And I really got to tell you, once you learn, you know, you get a nice knife that's sharp and, you know, you learn some cutting skills. You can watch YouTube videos. But you're really going to even find it somewhat therapeutic to slice your own vegetables up and get them ready to go. So, you know, use that as a time to enjoy. I think, you know, you can use that as a time to be present. You know, you're focusing on what you're doing, so you can let the, you know, the stresses of the day kind of go away. And don't worry so much about anything else, but just getting your meal on the table and knowing that you're going to provide yourself with a healthy meal that's going to nourish you. A lot of people complain of chronic pain, and whether it's joint pain, back pain, muscle pain, being fatigued, you know, look to what you're eating. You know, how much oil is in your diet? We know it's very inflammatory. You know, get the dairy out of the diet. Get the processed food out of the diet. You know, if your things that you're using have an ingredients list that are a couple paragraphs long, you need to get rid of it. So if it's not a vegetable that you recognize or an herb that you recognize, then that's probably not for you. If you're really not interested in cooking, our friends over at mamasez.com, MAMASEZZ.com can help you out with some packaged meals that they'll ship to your door in freezer bags, and then it's sustainable, and that they'll give you a box to mail back. You can get on the program, so you can have some of those in the freezer for nights that you just really can't seem to get prepared. But you know, the reality of it is, you know, make your menu for the week, and you know, have an idea what you're gonna cook, and keep those menus, because most people, if you think about what you've cooked over the years, people eat, you know, chicken and green beans and mashed potatoes, and they'll eat roast beef and carrots and potatoes, and they'll eat, you know, everybody has go-to meals that they grew up, you know, and there wasn't 30, your parents didn't make you 30 different meals. You know, even people that go out all the time eat the same foods all the time. So all of a sudden, when they become plant-based, they think that, oh my gosh, we've got to, you know, have all these fancy, fancy recipes. So we, you know, get the cookbooks out and all these different ingredients, and it takes all day to cook it. It doesn't. Things can, you know, be very, very quick. You can even go down to, you know, microwaving a baked potato, putting some asparagus, you know, in the oven for 10 minutes, make a salad, warm up some beans, put some onions on top. You've got a good meal. Sweet potato, beans, beets, beet tops. Some, one of the things we had this week, we did beet burgers in class. You can repurpose them and put them over a big green salad, or you can put them in a portobello and put that over a big bunch of greens and top with a little piece of avocado. So there's so many things you can do so quickly that, you know, it's a shame to say that, oh, you know, I've been in the kitchen all day cooking and prepping. You don't have to do that. You shouldn't drive yourself crazy unless, you know, you're, you know, Thanksgiving, or you want to make a big meal for people, or you want to have a good you know, a fancy dinner party and you want to spend the day, then great. You know, I enjoy that on holidays and I enjoy entertaining people. But most of the time during the week, you want to get home and cook and get out of the kitchen. So don't make it so hard on yourself. I'm still upset over the article that came out in the Annals of Internal Medicine saying that, you know, maybe red meat's not so bad. The way they actually put it was that maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's safe, or maybe it's not as harmful, but the evidence is not conclusive. And the analysis that they used took into consideration not only data, obviously they dinged it because it wasn't a randomized controlled trials that they looked at. Most of the trials were observational. We know you can't do nutritional studies. Randomized placebo, people know if they got meat or they've got a vegetable. So observational studies, there could be confounding variables besides the food, people's recollection, people's adherence. So we know that, you know, there can be problems with observation, but these statistics that they use took in subjective evidence, such as one of the things people may not like to eat. People like to eat meat. It's part of our culture. People might not be able to cook without it. People might not be willing to decrease their meat consumption. I mean, what does that have to do with giving scientific recommendations in a journal that's one of our two leading internal medicine journals? It's like having a child say, "Well, you know, we're gonna eat Pop-Tarts for breakfast and lunch and dinner because little Johnny doesn't really want to eat anything else, and I don't want to upset him, and I don't want to have an argument at the dinner table. So we're just gonna eat junk food, and that way we don't have to deal with it." They cried foul because a lot of the plant-based studies are observational, yet when they use their statistics, they use subjective evidence, such as those things. So I think that's, really, really sad. Even, one of their co-authors said, you know, if you looked at fruit versus a bowl of sugar, there really isn't enough evidence to say that one is better than the other, so go ahead and eat your preference. So if those are the kind of remarks that people give with studies like this, you know, you can't give it any more thought to it. Certainly news agencies are going to grab onto it because, you know, people, they have advertising budgets and all that goes. So just let it alone. It wasn't a real study. But perhaps we should look at what we all have in common. How would you deal with your friends and family when they say, "See, I told you, meat's okay." You know, people really don't know what to eat. You know, some days eggs are good, some days eggs are bad. Coffee's in, coffee's out, butter's in, butter's out. Now red meat's back in. So it really just doesn't matter. You might as well eat what tastes good. You're going to die of something, so don't worry about it. All right, so we can stick our head in the sand, and you can wait to get sick, and hopefully that, you know, you'll take your medications and be patched up and continue to deteriorate. That's one way. Or you can try to, be proactive about it. But what do we all agree on with even with those people? Most people that you would talk to would tell you, if you ask them, are vegetables good? And they would say yes. They provide a lot of vitamins and nutrients. They provide fiber. We know that fiber is good. Most people agree that places where people eat a lot of fiber, they have less disease. It's associated with less cardiovascular disease. Even the people from General Mills and that make Cheerios say that fiber is good. All the cereal companies agree fiber is good. We only can get fiber from plants. So plants are healthy and they have fiber, so they're good. What about fruits? Well, everybody likes berries. We can all agree on that. Strawberries, blueberries, those are great. Pomegranates, so that's really great. Apples, nobody has a problem with. So we have these fruits. Sometimes people start to argue over whether the glycemic index of fruit is too high or there's too much sugar in fruit. Well, fruit's loaded with antioxidants and vitamins and nutrients. And I guess the question I would ask is, do you know somebody that eats a lot of fruit that's really unhealthy? And we're going to say no. People that have diabetes or trouble with their sugar, for the most part, didn't get there because of eating fruit. They got there because of eating very refined products, you know, floury products and high-fat foods, and got overweight and their cells got blocked with fat. So it wasn't fruit that caused the problem. So, yes, okay, so now we have fruits and vegetables are good. Fiber is good. We need essential amino acids. Where are we going to get those? Well, only plants can fix nitrogen. So if we never ate a plant or never ate anything that didn't need a plant, we wouldn't survive. So we need plants to get nitrogen and get those amino acids. So those essential amino acids that the animal got, they got from plants. So we still need plants. So plants are a good source of essential amino acids. We know the more protein that you ingest, especially animal protein, is associated with worsening kidney function. So, you know, when you go to the restaurant, they ask you, what protein would you like? Because people don't want to say the animal, because we know now, you know, factory farming is not good and killing animals is not good. Enough people have realized that they don't want to really say the name. They don't want to say cow or pig or beef or pork. You know, those are kind of dirty sounding words. So they say, what kind of protein would you like? Well, the protein is associated, it doesn't come without fat. And if it's from an animal, it doesn't come without cholesterol. So what protein would you like? We know the protein's harder on your kidneys because your kidneys have to filter it. So more animal protein equals worsening kidney function. Plus the animal protein is going to carry fat and cholesterol with it. So in general, how could that actually be good for you? Because we know the protein part's going to cause a problem for your kidneys. So why wouldn't the stuff hooked onto it be a problem? But I digress. How about essential fatty acids? People ask, often ask, well, we need good fats. Well, what are good fats? People jump right to nuts and avocados. You know, nuts are 80% fat. They're very high in calories. You know, a few as a garnish is one thing in people that, you know, don't have cholesterol and diabetic problems. But for the most part, we're not squirrels. We don't need them. If you never ate a nut, you wouldn't be missing anything. So where do the essential fatty acids come from? Well, they come from plants as well. So an animal has to eat a plant to get essential fatty acids. Only plants make them. So how could plants be bad? How could vegetables be bad if we had to, you know, if we get our essential fatty acids from them? So are avocados good? Well, no, they're not. The main ingredient of an avocado is not an essential fatty acid. We need 1 to 2% of our calories from essential fatty acids. The problem is everything comes in a package. So an avocado may have some omega-3s, but it has a lot of saturated fats, monounsaturated fats, omega-6s. If you go back to a chia seed, it's more omega-3s, so that would be okay. In beans you have omega-3s, in greens you have omega-3s, but you don't have a whole lot of saturated fat, and you're certainly not getting cholesterol with it. So the package is better. So how could that be bad? So if you have a vegetable that has a good package, you can get omega-3s, you can get your amino acids. How could that possibly be bad for you? And then is it good? Well, of course it's good because it's providing with the essential nutrients that you need. 1 to 2% of your calories for essential fatty acids is the equivalent of rubbing some safflower, you know, some oil on your skin. So we don't have to worry about not getting enough. Every lifestyle disease that we treat is not from getting enough of, is from getting too much. But yet we're worried about not getting enough. So let's go back to the argument again. So if you eat animal products, you're getting cholesterol. I think most people would agree that high cholesterol, even the people that wrote these articles that are sponsored by the food business and people that are sponsored, you know, in the big universities that are sponsored by the drug companies, everybody agrees that cholesterol is bad. You know, most of these researchers are funded by companies that make statins. And, you know, the reason for a statin is to lower your cholesterol. So cholesterol's bad. Well, what comes with cholesterol? Red meat, animal products. So we want to get your cholesterol down, but we're not sure if red meat causes a problem. Same way with saturated fat. We know the saturated fat is bad for you. It's associated with increased cardiovascular disease. There was a recent article in Nature magazine looking at fatty acids in cancer with the metabolism of them. They're actually stimulate cancer cell production and increase inflammation. Everybody agrees that inflammation is bad. You know, we argue what's biggest in the plaque of an artery. Is there more cholesterol and more inflammation? It's a combination. So fatty acids, increased fats, cause inflammation. Well, how could that be bad? Guess what? Red meat, increased fat, increased inflammation, increased cancer rates. So, you know, there again, what we agree on, fat's not good. High levels of saturated fat's not good. High levels of cholesterol's not good. Our body can make all. We don't need to take in one drop of cholesterol. Our body will make all that we need. And actually, excessive cholesterol is associated with increased risk of cancer, too, because it starts to incorporate into some of the cellular components. So we agree on a lot of things, you know, mostly in medicine. You know, there's probably not a doctor that you could go to that said you shouldn't, that you should eat a high, Well, I guess there's some keto people that, you know, they'll say eat a high-fat diet so you can lose weight. But, you know, for the most part, nobody's going to tell you not to eat vegetables, and nobody's not going to tell you to eat whole fruit. And everybody's going to tell you watch your cholesterol and decrease inflammation. So it comes back to the things that they say they can't really say not to eat have all the things that they say you shouldn't really eat. So it doesn't make any sense. I think it's really funny that we're so uptight about doing randomized controlled trials and having fun and having funding, and we fail to use common sense and, you know, observe what's going on around us. You know, the blue zones looked, you know, very simply at people that live to be 101, and Dan Buettner interviewed them, and, you know, what do they have in common? You know, I think it's great to learn from your elders. You know, I wanted my daughter to be around her grandparents so that she could learn from them. Because as you old, you know, as you get older, you get wiser. You've experienced more of life. There's something to be learned from people that have experienced. No need to recreate the wheel, so to speak. And there are certain things that just really go together. There's a lot of research being done on looking at aging. And looking at cancer, what's their real etiology? You know, is there a genetic defect? Is it from the genes that we inherit that are turned on? You know, usually there's a perfect storm. Something, you know, everything goes together to cause a problem. You know, diabetes is associated with increased fat intake, increased weight. So it's not just one thing. There's a perfect storm. You know, years of accumulating excess of fat in the abdomen causes dysfunction of the liver, abnormal uptake of the muscle cell. But one of the things that, you know, that you look at what things have in common, and you know, what does cancer, diabetes, and aging have in common? As we get older, we lose muscle. We gain fat mass. After about age 35, you start to see a decline in muscle mass unless you're doing vigorous exercise on a fairly routine basis. You can put on muscle at any age, but contrary to what your local fitness trainer says, when you've gained 2 pounds over the last couple of weeks, it wasn't because you put on 2 pounds of muscle. It's because of what you ate and didn't exercise off. But you can build muscle over time, but your weight is not going to go up because of muscle over time, unless, you know, you're really bulking up and doing some bodybuilding. But it's pretty easy to see that, you know, you're getting leaner and your muscles are getting bigger. But that's not what usually is happening. So as you get older, you know, so if you weighed 120 pounds at 17 and you weigh 120 pounds at 60, chances are you're carrying more fat in all the wrong places than you did when you were 16. So women tend to carry fat in the abdomen, so do men. You know, some people are, you know, more genetically predisposed to have, you know, carry their weight centrally versus in their legs and arms. We have the pear shape and the apple shape. So, you know, that's where genes play a role. But it's, you know, just because you have the genetics to store fat in the middle doesn't mean you have to. You have to take in that fat to be able to store it. It just doesn't slip onto you from, you know, without eating. So we have an increase in fat mass as we age. We also know that so an increase in fat mass, you know, leads to decline, decrease in muscle mass, a loss of mitochondria. Mitochondria are the energy; they're the organelles in each of our cells that is responsible for utilizing energy, whether it's fat, glucose, protein, making protein. So they're the powerhouse of our cells, and when they stop to function or they decrease, then things start to go awry. That's when we can have DNA disturbances. When mitochondria can't metabolize glucose like it should, and there's more light, it doesn't go through all the cycles that it should go through. We can start to have DNA breaks, genetic changes that were there start to unravel, and we get into troubles. When you're getting older and you're losing mitochondria because you're losing muscle mass, then you're also losing the ability to utilize glucose. You tend to put on more weight. Diabetics, again, an abnormal ability to take up glucose into the cell because they're blocked with fat. So we had this mitochondrial dysfunction in all three of these conditions. So what would be the way to fix it? Well, you know, we could target the end result. So if your sugar is elevated, then we'll target, you know, your liver or some part of the cycle to decrease your ability to absorb or to uptake or block some pathway somewhere. But perhaps, you know, we should look at the big picture again. It's like, so we have mitochondrial dysfunction. So how can we build mitochondria? How can we make things better? Well, one, we need to get rid of the fat mass. So decreasing all this inflammation associated with carrying more fat. So that would be the number one. That's going to decrease our risk of cancer, decrease our risk of diabetes, and decrease the inflammation associated with aging. Exercise to build more muscle, build more mitochondria. You know, the more we build, the more muscle we have, the better we utilize glucose, the better off we'll be. So simple things that you can do, you know, as opposed to wait for the cure to come around. So, you know, when you're, again, back to don't really want to take time to cook, if you're not taking time to cook, then you're depending on other people and or restaurants to do your cooking for you. And how is that actually helping your health? What about your mental health? What about, you know, your attitude from a day to day? Do you think you're going to win or do you think you're going to lose? You know, if you have a doom and gloom and there's nothing I can do about it, you know, like we talked about before, I'm just going to sit and wait because nobody knows, you know, what's the right thing to eat. You know, I don't know if it's butter or vegetables or whatever, so I'm just going to sit, doom and gloom, I'm done. You know, there's nothing I can do. I might as well just, you know, sit here and medicate myself with whatever comes along. Well, there's a couple things you can do. We also know that exercise improves your mental function. It increases exercising and building muscle, building mitochondria, improving glucose control actually is helpful for memory. So they took older individuals in nursing homes and even put them through rehab, and they showed improved memory function. We know that getting out and walking and running is as good of antidepressant as many of the medications, probably better. Getting outside and enjoying fresh air is, you know, great for your mental attitude. And this week there was another good thing that the Circulation actually published: the dog ownership and survival. There was a review and meta-analysis looking at all the way back from 1950 to 2000 to 19, and they looked at all-cause mortality. And when you looked at all these studies that owning a dog or having a companion dog lowered your risk of death in the long term, driven by a decrease in cardiovascular mortality, 24% decrease in all-cause mortality just by owning a dog. So for you cat lovers out there, you know, they didn't look at cats, but they certainly looked at dogs. And, you know, we have recommended patients get dogs on more than one occasion. I've written prescriptions for people to go get an animal. You know, we've had Eric O'Gray on the show with, walking with Petey. But certainly, you know, I have nothing better than to have a dog that you have to go walk or a dog as a companion. We know that houses with babies that have dogs, the children have less allergies, less infections because of being exposed to the dog microbes. There's even a study that looks at microbes between individuals that live in a household, and we're probably more alike if we have a dog because, again, of the sharing of microbes. So we know, you know, a big... the more diverse our gut microbiome is, the healthier that we are. You know, add a positive mental attitude associated with walking your dog and playing with your dog and increase exercise. So if you don't have a dog, go out and get a dog. And that doesn't mean go out to a puppy mill or go to a store. You know, I'd like to make a huge plug for rescue. We have rescue German Shepherds. Gretchen and Samantha are being very good this evening. Gretchen's sleeping right now, so she's not barking. She likes to bark at the FedEx guy when he comes by, so we're doing the podcast a little later, so she's happy about that. We also have a rescue cat. There are many rescue organizations, so if you're, you like a certain breed better than another breed, then there's always a rescue for those animals. But, you know, mixed breeds make some of the nicest pets that you ever want to know. And I think that they appreciate it, too. You know, that they know that they're getting a second chance and you're giving and they're giving you a second chance. So there's nothing better than going out and rescuing a dog or cat. So I have to say that. How is it? Adopt, don't shop is the way it goes. And I'd like to thank Gretchen and Samantha for making my life a whole lot better. I don't really know a whole lot about the demographics of people that listen to this podcast. I know that most people are plant-based or are becoming plant-based. If you think you're the oldest person listening to this podcast, email me. If you think you're the youngest person listening to this podcast, email me and tell me your age. I'd love to hear from you. But, I don't think that there's any age that can't benefit from taking responsibility for their own health, eating good, and being a lighthouse for other people. And, you know, I was thinking about, you know, last week when I did the Ironman, there was the oldest person was a 78-year-old gentleman that finished in over the time limit, but he still finished 17 hours and 18 minutes, I believe. He was 78 years old, and he was also blind. And he looked great. I saw an interview with him, and, you know, he took the challenge, and he was happy to be able to compete. I think sometimes people put themselves in a box, and they think that, you know, life is over, and there's not a new challenge for them, nothing more that they can do. Perhaps they don't have time to do anything. I had someone tell me that they didn't really have time to exercise, but obviously there's 24 hours in a day. You take eight hours away. Most people aren't working, 7-18 hour days a week. Again, you can make that food simple and still present it nicely and have a family dinner and still have time to exercise. I think the best time is in the morning. If you look at the statistics of ages, you'll see people do high school athletics, may or may not, but they're active somewhat in high school. Maybe do some intramural, but it really falls off even in college. The number of people that either do college athletics or college intramurals. So people start their sedentary behavior in college. Then they get married, and there may be some little limited gym involved, going to the gym here and there, or especially until they get married. But then once kids start to come into the picture, it's more about watching than it is doing. And, I spoke with somebody when I was sitting in line for, again, Ironman Chattanooga, and they were talking about, their family, and they kind of had an extended, blended family, and the kids have always been going to the race, so grandma and grandpa come to the Ironman, they bring the kids, the kids are running 5Ks. You look at a lot of athletes that their kids are doing, different activities, so I think as a family, it's great to do activities together. Growing up, we went on hikes together. We did rowboat, we did volleyball, we did evening kickball games, we did evening softball games. So my parents were very involved in, doing activities. So you keep moving and exercising, and even calisthenics and things like that can get a quick workout with push-ups and pull-ups as a young person, and still maintain your body strength. But people tend to fall off in those years and they gain weight, and then they wake up when they're in their 40s and say, "Ooh, I'm getting the middle age spread, so to speak." Maybe starting to have some health problems, high blood pressure, diabetes start to play. The first thing people do is join a gym, so they start going 3 days a week because there was this mastermind of, going to go out to the gym for 3 days a week and that should take care of it. And they're shocked when that didn't. I can't believe it. I'm going to the gym and nothing's really happening. But they might meet somebody and they might say, "Hey, I do a 5K or a Tough Mudder," and that get them. And sometimes when people started doing activities, then they start eating better. So there's a group of people that'll start to become active in their 40s and 50s to try to keep in shape, depending on, again, their nutrition, their ability to recover from some of these activities. You know, they start to get injuries. And so you hear people say, well, I can't run anymore because my knees are bad. If your knees are bad and that's why you're not running, then you need to check your running form, check your strength, and check what you're eating, because the inflammation in your diet probably has a tremendous, in the fat and the oil in your diet, probably has a tremendous amount to do with why you're not able to exercise, why you have pain. So that pain should all be able to go away with your nutrition and doing some strength training. Sitting won't make pain go away. Sitting will only make you more stiff over time. But I think, you know, again, back to the, you know, pick something, find something that you like to do, find a challenge, you know, whether it's a 5K or a bike ride or a swim race or some sort of class. But I think you should find some sort of challenge that to get you out of your comfort zone, that you continue to build muscle. Remember, mitochondria makes you want to eat better. And, you know, the other thing that I see that kind of drives me crazy is people exercise in order to eat. So, you know, it's the donut run or the beer run or having the pizza into that. That's not good. You know, you're not exercising to eat. You're exercising to be healthy, and you're eating to be healthy. You can't counteract one with the other. So not exercising and eating healthy is not going to be as good as exercising and eating healthy. Same way with, you know, if you're just eating terrible after an athletic event, you're not going to make any progress, and you're going to continue to see decline, inflammation, and injury. So, you know, bottom line, no matter how young you are or old you are, there's always an event or something you can challenge yourself with to get out and move and do something. And so I think it's really important, and there's never an end to that, to challenge and to, you know, to, you know, get your family and your friends involved, and let's do something fun. You know, Jesse Itzler puts on this event where he rents a mountain, and people go up and down this, you know, usually it's a ski resort, and they go up and down the, you know, one of the runs until they've climbed the distance of Mount Everest, you know, or people doing a, you know, an ultra event or a marathon event. You know, I think this great way, I started doing marathons as a means to travel. I wouldn't take a vacation because I live in Florida. It's like, where do you go? We used to go someplace where it's warm, so I'm already here. So I wouldn't take a vacation until we started scheduling events around, you know, doing races. And it's a way to, you know, start to enjoy to travel again. So keep it simple. Sign up for something and you know, do something that makes you move every day and interacts with other people, because we know if you're interacting and you're socially engaged, even though it's an observational study, it's not a randomized controlled trial, but I don't think anybody will disagree that if you have a circle of friends that's supportive and you move and you're smiling, that you're going to do better than the person that's sitting inside by themselves in the dark eating bonbons. So what happens if you just need a nudge? Well, that's going to be where we're come in. You can go to Jamie at drdelaney.com and email me with, you know, any questions that you'd like to email me with. And you can go to drdelaney.com and check out our website and join our practice and get involved in some of the activities that we do. The other thing, we have our conference March 28th, 2020. Not only do we have an all-day conference with breakfast and lunch, as well as speakers, Pam Popper and Karen Hartglass are going to be here. Addie Meinert, my registered dietitian, is going to be there. We'll have cooking demos. The day before, we're doing consultations, but we're also going to have an immersion week the week before. So if you really want to get kick-started and you want to have, you know, plenty of attention to help you get your exercise program going, your activity going, learn cooking skills, learn the science behind plant-based nutrition, the science behind health and wellness, and you really want to do a week worth of it in a nice sunny location with a good view and a nice hotel, go to the website and click on our immersion week and come in, you know, and reserve your spot. We're only going to take 7 people. So it's important that you get signed up and get your spot reserved. And again, if you want to have some backup cooking, and some stuff in the freezer. You can get your Mama Says also on our website, mamasays.com. So we look forward to hearing from you. Keep listening. Keep improving your diet. You know, don't be a victim. Take control of your health. Get out and move your body. Sign up for something. And I'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for listening.